From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson. I am actually off this week. So we're going to bring you a classic from the archives. Here is an interview with the excellent and amazing singer, songwriter, and book writer, Dessa. From WBEZ Chicago, this is Nerdette. I'm Greta Johnson, and Nerdette is a show where we talk to your favorite or soon-to-be favorite people about how their passions drive what they do. And today's guest is Dessa. You don't know who Dessa is? Well, buckle up.
We don't say go out and be brave. Now we say be careful, stay safe. In any given instance, that don't hurt. It sinks in like stilettos in soft earth. Like the big win is not a day without an incident. I beg to differ with it. I think a woman's worth. I think that she deserves a better line of work than motherfucking vigilance. Don't give me vigilance. By definition, you can't make a difference if the big ambition is simply standing sentry to your innocence. That's not a way to live. That can't be what a woman is. That gives her nothing to aspire to. What that is, it's just a life of running fire drills.
Oh my God, that song, like, I'm about to cry. Also, I feel like I have goosebumps on goosebumps. Like, that song is just so good. And that is Dessa. She owns her words so beautifully. I am so excited for this conversation. That was a song called Fire Drills. It's off Dessa's fourth studio album called Chime. We're going to talk to her about that album, which means, of course, we'll listen to some more music as well. We're also going to talk with Dessa about how she, eternal sunshine of the spotless, minded her own brain to remove memories of a really painful relationship. And we're going to talk to Dessa about the meaning of success for her, because she's not just a musician and a rapper and a poet, as if that weren't enough. In 2018, not only did Dessa put out this album, Chime, she also published a memoir that is legitimately great. She also co-created her very own whiskey, and she collaborated with the Minnesota Orchestra. So obviously, my first question for her was, how are you doing all the things?
Like, for me, 2018 is it was a year I'm proud of, but I don't think I could do two of them in a row. And I don't, like, it was right towards the end, a lot of, like, crazy exhaustion, that kind of bleary crying stuff where nothing's wrong, I don't think, or maybe everything's wrong. Hard to tell, you know? Doing the book and the record and the orchestra show. So, yeah, in some ways, I also feel like I can kind of beg off, because when people can see the desperate in my eyes, they're like, oh, this is a woman who can't.
Okay.
Like, she can't.
Never mind.
Yeah, do you need a squeeze ball? Like, she can't do it. It's clear. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's listen to a song.
They say there's good grief, but how can you tell it from the bed? Maybe it's only...
It feels to me like you're talking about the fact that we have to go through terrible things in order to be exactly who we are.
I got snow in my pockets, went down again head first. Lace drill bits to my point shoes, pirouette through the hardwood to pay dirt. Night falls, day breaks, time has a funny kind of violence, and I'm trying to keep in mind it can't leave you the way it finds you.
Good grief.
I've heard people say it, what a phrase, what a state to be in, but I don't know where they go to get praying. I do my own stunts and my own saving, but there's something I miss, something I've been missing.
Maybe
there's good grief, but how can you tell it from bed? Maybe it's only in the fact good grief's the one that's in your past. They say
I think there's also at least in our culture, like, a compulsion to sanctify grief in a way that I think is a little too clean and neat to be true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that idea that I wouldn't change it if I could. Maybe the person who I am. Mm-hmm. So while some of that's true, I think sometimes it's us kind of retroactively over our shoulders cleaning up that narrative. You know, it's like, well, okay, if you hadn't had the car accident, you hadn't had the month off work, then you wouldn't have, whatever, met Mindy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. Love Mindy. So my question is, do you want another car accident and to break your leg again?
Right.
No one says yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was really a balanced deal where this grief was constantly improving us, then we would opt for, like, you know what? I'm going to go get my second divorce. I mean, nobody does that on their day off,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I think that while grief is necessary for growth, I think it's not because grief is always curative or always tempering a character, although sometimes I think it is, but because there's no way to live fully without risking grief. But every once in a while you find yourself in grief that forges you and makes you stronger, more empathetic. And every once in a while you find yourself in a grief that's just a wasteland of pain.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? Like, to risk fully and be truly alive, you're just going to have to go through a couple of both of them.
Yeah.
There's no other way through.
Right. Better to have loved and lost.
Yeah. And I say that just barely. The scales are almost even. Like, loving, losing love for me. And I think I am maybe a little... When I trade notes with the people who I trust to tell me frankly about their experiences, I will admit that I maybe am a little sensitive to that. I think generally I am probably sensitive, and I don't mean delicate. I don't feel delicate. I think I'm, in a lot of ways, badass. I can survive a lot of pain.
You're for sure badass. From over here.
I can survive a lot of pain, but I feel pain, it seems, more readily than some of my friends do.
So that gets me to thinking about the, like, crazy brain rewiring neuroscience stuff that you did. For people who aren't familiar with it, can you tell us a little bit about, like, essentially you had been in this on-again, off-again relationship for, what, like, over a decade, right?
Yeah.
And it was just, like, kind of destroying you. And it finally got to this point where you realized that you needed to figure out how to rewire your brain to get him out of it.
So, right? So it was with a relationship with someone who was in my rap career.
Right. So you're, like, seeing him all the time.
All the time. And to keep the shows successful, which is, I don't mean just, like, to keep the show on the road. I mean, like, that's my life and my love and my passion.
Right,
It necessitated seeing him all the time. But also there's this, I'm just hiding and living a lot of lies at the same time because it's not appropriate to cry at a rap show. You know what I mean? Like, not often anyway. And so there was a lot of, like, tamping down the feelings to hustle every night. And also, you don't want to ruin the vibe in the van. Like, and it's irresponsible to ruin the vibe in the van.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be on tour with someone who's crying all the time. It's going to suck. It ruins my tour, you know? So anyway.
Yeah.
Struggled with it for a long time, and I wasn't exactly sure what else to try. I had done the normal stuff. Like, I did end up moving away from him in the town in which we grew up, at least part-time. You date other dudes, and you stay active, and you go to the gym, you hang out with your friends. You do all the normal things. And I was still feeling shook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Had another great relationship, and as soon as that ended, it was, like, back. And so I ended up seeing this TED Talk by a researcher named Dr. Helen Fisher.
Yeah.
And this wasn't me, like, trying to get over my love. This was me just, like, watching TED at night, you know, like, with a glass of wine.
Got nerd. Yep.
This is just that. This is off hours nerding.
Cruising TED Talks. As one does.
You do. I will take your least expensive bottle of Chardonnay. Thank you. And so I'm watching this TED Talk, and she had done some studies that indicated that there might be particular regions of the brain that are active in romantic love. And those are different than, like, maternal love and platonic love. And that blew my mind.
Yeah.
Last but not least, we found activity in the brain region associated with deep attachment to another individual. When you've been rejected in love, not only are you engulfed with feelings of romantic love, but you're feeling deep attachment to this individual. Moreover, this brain circuit for reward is working, and you're feeling intense energy, intense focus, intense motivation, and the willingness to risk it all to win life's greatest prize.
So if you were to lie in an fMRI machine and look at a photo of someone you love, and try to conjure the feelings associated with that relationship, that your brain would behave in a recognizable pattern. Particular regions would light up with activity.
Yep.
So, of course, I was like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it. Because if I find where my love is, I can destroy it. So, short story long, I meet with a researcher who's game. She's like, hey, if you can come in, like, nights or weekends when the machines aren't
busy. Like, they're around. I can help you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, so the Center for Magnetic Resonance Research at the University of Minnesota was like, come on through. Met with this woman named Cheryl. Did the thing. Saw my brain. If you imagine, like, an x-ray, how an x-ray looks, you sometimes see these images on TV, but, like, the profile of my own head, right? And I can see it with no hair, you know, so you're already kind of skeletal looking to yourself. You can see all the little folds of your brain. And then I saw these bright colors where my brain was in love, you know? So now I thought, okay, I've got this, like, measurable, objective measure of my brain in love. now I want to figure out how to get it out. And so I ended up working with a clinician named Penny Jean Gracefire, who does a technique called neurofeedback. Mm-hmm. So essentially you're covering your scalp with electrodes that are sensitive enough to measure your brainwaves. And we worked together for a course of 9 sessions so that she'd hook me up. I'd be able to see my brain operating in real time on like a flat screen TV.
That's amazing.
Crazy.
Like even that is so awesome.
Blew my mind. So we did these 9 sessions. And then, you know, just like in the magazines, like the before and after photo for a makeover or a diet or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I went back into the fMRI lab. F stands for functional there. So
okay.
Yeah. So you get to see the, you know, the behavior, the workings of your brain. Went back into the fMRI lab. Again, lied on my back in this huge magnet looking at pictures of my ex. You know? And we alternated those photos between pictures of a dude who I think is attractive, who I happen to know, but I'm not in love with. And in that way, you know, the researchers are trying to isolate just the love feeling. And
right.
The researchers don't know who is who in those
right,
photos.
Right, but they
so
could
that they
guess.
Couldn't, they did guess. Yeah.
Wild.
It was cool. And we did see some change. Yeah, some notable change. Now, I want to, like, contextualize this whole thing with saying, like, this is not a definitive experiment.
It worked for you.
I'm a sample of one. And
right.
And maybe it worked for me because I'm convincing scientists to let me into their fMRI labs all the dang
of
time.
Course.
And that's
yeah.
Forced talk therapy with scientists, you know.
Well, and you were in a place where you were really ready for that to happen, too. Like,
that's
you know.
True.
Like,
I was ready to try to explode the love instead
right.
of hoping.
Right.
Hoping. And I had been looking for years for a way to try to – it's so weird because it feels like in some way – isn't that elective? What is elective? Why can't
sure.
I stop hoping? What a dumb thing not to put it. It's like a faucet running, right?
Yeah.
Through the 2000s. Like, why don't I have access to that water main?
Yeah, yeah.
They say that your heart is the size of your fist. I can tell you firsthand. I know how that glove fits. It takes your whole life just to teach it 2 tricks. It beats and it. What if I could cure me of you?
The thing I can't stop thinking about when I love this story. I think it's fascinating. I love that you seem generally curious and game, which I think is really cool. But I wonder, like, here you are, you know, you're an artist. So much of people's art is built on strife. You know, like you think about a song like Good Grief, you can't write that song unless you go through some terrible stuff.
Right.
Were you ever worried as you went through this process that destroying the love, that like eliminating that hope would actually like alter your art?
Yeah. Yes. And I was excited by the prospect only because like if I'd seen that TED Talk 8 years ago, no part of me would have been tempted to actually try to recreate that protocol because I did understand that to be grist for my favorite mill. You know, I was writing songs I was proud of. But 10 years later, you've written a lot of torch songs, man. Like, you know, and I would like to write other songs as well. And I do write other songs as well. But that was well covered. And also, I mean, I don't perceive myself to be in any danger of running out of pain. Just the universe provides that. The universe will provide,
yeah,
right? Your
yeah.
parents will get older,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Your dog will die. You'll have a fight with a friend. And glorious things will happen, too. You will
right.
meet a new person who develop a kinship with them that you didn't think was possible and see a great new movie. Like, there's more pain on the way. And there's more glory, too. So I wasn't worried that if I wasn't so desperately in love that... That all of a sudden, kind of, I'd be whistling in major keys all the time and wouldn't have a thing to write.
Coming up after the break, we talk with Dessa about what might be my favorite 45-second song ever. You're listening to Nerdette.
Girls on the black turn rope calling out the same games that I played. It goes turn around, jump, touch the ground.
Okay, I want to listen to one more song. I think this is my favorite track from the album.
I'm high strung, universal donor. That's type A, type O. To wake up, calm down, or shape up. Chai tea, tai tea, type O. No easy money. I'm trying to get rich slow. Standing on the acorn I planted, I trusted oak trees grow. ENFP Myers-Briggs, 6'2 with my highest kicks. Hero to the neighbor's kid. Dolled up, I'm the baddest person. Still like backpacks over purses. Hate the Q's or twos in cursive. Talk real fast when I get nervous. Rap real fast, but that's on purpose. I've single-handed some duets. I've been as bad as good girls get. But I don't regret too much just yet. I mostly gave more than I got. Tried not to watch the ticking clock. Like, always a bridesmaid, never an astronaut.
Okay. When I first heard that, I was just like, oh my God, this is the most amazing thing I have ever. Like, it was just so, it's just perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you for writing it.
Oh man, thank you.
In your book, You've talked, and like even just now mentioning that you're type A, like you've talked about how you're a little neurotic.
Yes.
You also have this amazing imagination. I loved the different like thought experiments you have in My Own Devices, because I don't know, I just find your brain really fascinating.
Yeah, that's like the kindest compliment. Thank you.
But like, I wonder, like, what's your relationship like with your brain?
I admit that this year I don't know if I thought people would get chiller as they grew older, and I'm becoming a little more neurotic than I used to be. You said you're type A. Would you use that word to describe yourself, neurotic or no?
Neurotic?
Not really.
Yeah.
A little.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm honest, yeah.
Are you more or less neurotic than you were at 16?
Oh, I'm way more neurotic.
No.
But I smoke way less pot, so I think
right.
That's better.
See?
That's for the best.
I think there's a limit. Like, a little neuroticism is okay, but I can't tell if I'm kind of flirting with that ceiling.
Yeah.
What's my relationship with my brain? I'm grateful for all the things that made it that have nothing to do with me. Like, it's so much inherited from my parents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had a mom who didn't drink a bunch. That's no compliment to me. Thanks, Mom. You know,
totally.
And I got a couple, you know, I think I got some good verbal genes from both of them. Even as a little kid, I was really verbal. And I don't think that's a product of any like special ambition in a 3-year-old. That's just her brain developing. And I got a pretty good one in that compartment.
Right,
I got a lousy one in spatial intelligence that I'm not good at all.
Directions,
yeah.
You mentioned.
Yeah, I mentioned I was lost 3 times on the way to the studio. I was lost for a really long time outside.
Sorry,
that's why I'm not a topographer, you know. But I think some of it, I feel lucky. And then I do talk to it every once in a while, like when I'm up against a deadline. And I know, especially a big one for an orchestra show, for example, I always write a new monologue, like a little play that unfolds. And this last one, even 3 days beforehand, I didn't have the monologue. And I was just in my car and I said, okay, brain, it's time. So, yeah, I mean, it's like, please, I'm asking you as nicely as I know how. And then when, you know, and 12 hours later, the idea came that the model, and I remember just like in my car, like I punched the like felt lining above my head, and I went, that's it. Thank you, brain. You know, God, I don't know why you make me wait till 48 hours before the show to write and memorize stuff, but bailed me out again, and I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Do you think of yourself as a perfectionist?
Yes. I mean, there's no, I would like to not. I think, again, like I have a lot of room to grow and develop there because, you know, if you get too concerned with the granular stuff, maybe you miss an opportunity to try something really bold and brave and big. And I definitely have gotten too involved in granular stuff. Even dumb shit like text messages.
Oh.
You know, like I want them to be punctuated and spelled right.
Mm-hmm.
That's not helpful or useful. There's no return on the investment of that time. If you're writing a homie, if you're writing a friend, they have already formed an impression of you, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
the
just say I'll be there. You know what I mean? Yes, K would work. But instead, it's like, there's an opportunity for a reference here to like, but there's kind of a compulsion towards that I know isn't,
Well, I mean, that's tricky, right? Because, like, you want to make your art as great as it possibly can be. But, like, if you're up against the deadline, like, you have to call it at some point.
Right. I have heard, this is not my line. I overheard it from, like, an author who was sitting on a panel with other authors. But up against a publisher's deadline, you know. And one of them said, well, it's late once and it sucks forever. And I remember thinking, that is a phrase that's going to stick with me for sure. You know, so Not always, but often you can find a way to make a deadline push a little bit if it really is in the service of excellence. Mm-hmm. Not always, not mm-hmm. for show, but
yeah.
for written work.
For sure.
You've got wheels beneath the knee, just my type, all built for speed. I still fall so easily. I'm just bored.
So at this point in your life, in your career, what does success look like for you?
I mean, is it? I think I probably have come to ascribe to that idea that that success very often is that bar that keeps inching further away, right? As you make some modest ascent,
yeah.
And maybe that's not proof of like an impossible to satisfy human nature. Maybe it's just like lunch. Like, lunch is never over. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, you had lunch yesterday. Like, well, I need lunch again today.
Like
too.
Laundry.
Like laundry. It just...
It's always there.
That's what I... Yeah. Like, by virtue of being alive, the appetite regenerates.
So what's your lunch these days, then?
Okay, that's fair. I think that right now... I sound a little salty, but I think this is true, that, like, I have gotten, like, critically a lot of pushback from like, industry folks on the fact that that the songs sound so different from one another.
Oh, interesting. So you can't fit in one box, and that's annoying to people?
Exactly. And so you literally have to check one box when you put out a record, when you upload it to the world, and it says what genre it is. So in my case, there were four choices. We could pick rap. We could pick alternative.
Mm-hmm.
We could pick pop and some other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
if only there were just a lady box.
Yeah, if only it's just ladies. But like the box that you click ends up really, you know what I mean? Really like
for
affecting
sure.
the whole life. And I think I was so like, I found that very frustrating. I was just like, I think genre does have its purpose, but I think it's a great way to figure out where to shelve a record. Genre is great for planograms, but maybe like less so for art's sake, for making music, you know? And so I think for success in the next work that I'm doing, I think I have conceded ground to that idea. Like, I should try to make these songs work. I'm going to figure out. And I'm just done. I'm over it. Like, I make weird stuff. Some of it's going to be pop. And if you don't like pop, then press fast forward, man. Like, you've got a button for that, you know? And some of it's going to be rap music. And some of it's going to be weird. And some of it's going to be, like, experimental symphonic stuff. And if that's too confusing, then fucking go find someone else to listen to. You know, like, I'm done conceding. So I hope that I can make good on that to myself and do some stuff that's weird and that's rad. I'd like to try to find a way to expand, I guess, like the people who readership if I can. I don't know exactly how to do that, but I know that that's one of the big things I'd like to strive for in 2019. I have to earn my way in the literary world, and I'm ready for that fight. And I know it's uphill, but I really want it.
Dessa, thanks for coming on Nerdette. This was really fun.
Thanks for the conversation.
You guys, I just think Dessa is the best human. If you have not read her book, I actually recommend that you listen to it because she narrates it, and it is always the best to hear an author read you their own book. It's called My Own Devices, True Stories from the Road on Music, Science, and Senseless Love. Also, obviously, check out Chime, her newest album. It is perfect.
We lean to turn and we go down.
The show is produced by myself, Greta Johnson, along with Justin Bull. Our co-creator is Trisha Bobita, and our executive producer is Brendan Banizak. Nerdette is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, follow us on NPR One, or listen in the WBEZ app. And it's super amazingly helpful if you leave us some stars on Apple Podcasts. Many thanks to YakiRam63 for the review. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We are at Nerdette Podcast. We have a newsletter. It's pretty cool. You can find it at wbeasy.org/nerdsletter. Our theme music is by Poddington Bear. Do your homework! Just kick ass like Dessa, man. What would Dessa do? WWDD.